योगेन चित्तस्य पदेन वाचां मलं शरीरस्य च वैदिकेन योपाकरोत्तं प्रवरं मुनीनां पतञ्जलिं प्राञ्जलिरानतोऽस्मि स्तुवे पतञ्जलिं व्यासं शङ्करं च मुनित्रयं कर्तृसूत्रस्य भाष्यस्य क्रमात् विवरणस्य च. So we are coming to the end of the third chapter that you find in your text. It is called Vibhutipada, the chapter dealing with the psychical powers, some mental, not supernatural, it's actually very scientific evolution of the inherent skills of the human mind. So the last sutras of this third chapter, that's what we are going to deal with today. And then we will begin the Samadhipada. So the 55th sutra is Taragam Sarva Vishayam Sarvatha Vishayam Akramam Cheti Vivekajam Jnayam. This is the 55th one. 56th one is Satta Purushayohu Shuddhisami Kaivalyamiti, the last sutra of Vibhutipada. The 55th sutra gives a detailed analysis, of course in the form of an aphorism, of what happens, what kind of inherent mental powers we develop as a part of yogic practices, is a result of yogic practices called samyama. So you have to remember, samyama is the practice of dharana, dhyana and samadhi. In simple language we can say concentration, meditation and intuition. When we use our mind and when we train our mind in higher skills of concentration and meditation, at one stage the mind is able to penetrate into the true nature of anything that we meditate upon, that we concentrate upon. Or we practice even at a physical level, even physical practices, physical exercises, activities done with this intense concentration will enable us in developing some unique skills at a physical level. So, at the mental level, it could be much more powerful. Because mind is subtler than the physical body. As our concentration and meditation become more and more focused on the subtle aspects of the human personality, then the powers also become much more subtle. So, what Patanjali says is this. This concentration, meditation, and the result of these two early practices, that is intuition, is called samadhi, let us say. Dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. That gives us a particular kind of knowledge, wisdom, spiritual wisdom. And the spiritual wisdom is called tharakam, it's an adjective. Literally, it means something that takes you across. So, here, this intuitive knowledge is described as the knowledge that takes us across the ocean of worldly bondages. So sometimes called samsara, the word samsara is used in Sanskrit. Samsarati di samsara, I mean something that goes on flowing, moving. Birth, life, death, rebirth. So it goes on as a cycle, as a wheel. It's a never-ending process. So how long, how many times are we to be born? And how many times are we supposed to work hard, earn money, wealth, and then die, and then reborn? So where is the end of this game? So this game should come to an end, and that end is called liberation, kaivalya, in Sanskrit. In fact, that's the topic of the last and fourth chapter of Patanjali's book, Liberation, the Transcendental Spiritual Freedom. What's this spiritual freedom? Swami Vivekananda gives a very interesting analogy. It's a very famous, it has become very famous since the publication of Vivekananda's books. What he says is, what is the nature of this freedom? This freedom from this endless cycle of birth, life, death, and rebirth. In a cosmic way, we can say the world emerges, and then oxygen, water, all these things are formed. The conditions are generated in which human beings can live, oxygen, water, everything. Then maybe after some billions of years, if you call a big bang, it can be followed by big crunch. Maybe after billions of years, the cosmos may go back to its subtle form, maybe gaseous form. And then everything will be wiped out. But again, inevitably, maybe after several trillions of years, again the living conditions may re-emerge on Earth. And again, you know, all these, the lower mechanisms, amoebas, and gradually animal kingdom and human beings all may evolve. So like that, the cyclic process goes on. In Hindu Vedantic yoga tradition, existence is not in a straight line. Existence not only at the individual level, but also at the cosmic level, at the macro level and micro level. At the micro level, we are born, we live, we die, and reborn. So it is not an endless straight line progression. It is a cycle. And at the cosmic level, there's a creation is nothing but the projection of the subtle in gross form. It's called a manifestation. And after several trillions of years, this created universe may go back in subtle form. And it's called involution, means the evolved state going back to its subtle involved state. It's like a tree going back to its seed. It doesn't really happen. But then we know that the mighty tree is really coming up to a tiny seed. So the tree is in an involved state present in the seed. Otherwise, when you put that seed in soil, water, manure, everything, and that particular tree emerges, it sprouts, becomes a huge tree, and the same fruits are found in those trees, and inside that those fruits, the same type of seeds from which the tree has emerged. So practically there is a cyclic movement at the macro cosmic level and also the micro individual level. Now, at the individual level, human beings have got one special, unique privilege. Human beings alone can seek for higher freedom. Higher freedom means freedom at the supra-sensory level. Thinking for some time, a pause, waiting for some time and think, well, what's the meaning of all this? Is there a higher evolution possible? So this quest for higher evolution is the quest for freedom. So Vivekananda, in one context, gives a very interesting illustration. A huge, mighty locomotive, a train, is moving on the railway track. Maybe freight trains may be 1 mile long. It may be traveling at 100 miles an hour. It's a huge steel monster moving at 100 miles an hour. So it is very powerful, very big in shape and size and strength and dimension. But that train has got a problem. How do you understand the problem? Then Swamiji gives another side of the story. A small tiny worm is crawling on the railway track. And this huge train, 1 mile long, is rushing towards it. This tiny worm can sit for some time or stand and can assert its freedom. It can crawl out of the track if it wants to save its life. Like the human beings can take himself out of this track and wait for some time and think, what's the meaning and purpose of human life? And at a higher level, beyond the scientific, philosophical, theological level, we can ask the question, what's my true nature? Am I just this physical body, this mental, say intellectual, psychological mechanism? Do I have something higher? So this question, only a human being, only evolved human being, who can start a quest for freedom, spiritual freedom, alone can ask. And at that time, it asks this question. Is there an end to this cyclic rotation? Being born, living, enjoying and suffering, worrying and being anxious, and then dying after 100 years, again to be reborn. So, is there a way out? So, Patanjali says, the wisdom, the spiritual wisdom that you acquire as a result of practice of yoga, in a broader sense, any spiritual practice, prayer, meditation, karma yoga, anything, it is the way out of this track. So the worm stands for some time and suddenly it hears a mighty noise of the huge locomotive rushing towards it, and it slowly crawls out of the track and he saves his life. Like that, a human being also can stop for some time. In fact, that is the implication of the first sutra of next chapter that we are going to deal with, Atha Yoga Anushasanam. As I mentioned earlier, Atha means now onwards, when we are facing this, the reality of spiritual slavery in the midst of physical freedom, the reality of spiritual bankruptcy of poverty in the midst of material pleasure and happiness. Then we ask the question, what's the true meaning of life? As Buddha asked when he was living the life of a prince in his palace. So Atha means at that point you go for yoga. So yoga in a broader sense means quest for higher freedom, or let us say in modern language, I would say quest for higher evolution. You know, you cannot evolve physically. Darwin has put an end to that kind of freedom. You cannot grow another hand or another head. There is no more evolution possible at the physical level. But there is an evolution possible at the cultural, intellectual, spiritual level. That evolution begins when we turn to yoga. So how, when we turn to yoga, that is the implication, the meaning, that is the description in the first sutra of the chapter that we are going to begin today, if we get time, otherwise next class. So in the 55th sutra of the third chapter, Taraka means something that takes you across this ocean, this endless cycle of life and death. So Taragam in Tarati in Sanskrit means, Taradha means something that takes you across. So think of this life as an ocean or a river, and yoga or samyama, as it means in this context, Taragam, it means this context, a higher yogic meditation practice, let us say, Dharana, Dhyana and Samadhi together. It becomes a boat that takes you across this river of life and death. So here we Tarakam Vivekajam Jnanam, that's the meaning here. Means this knowledge, spiritual knowledge, which is born on spiritual wisdom and discerning wisdom, it takes you across because it enables you to think of the ultimate meaning and relevance of human life and existence. And that inquiry takes you to spiritual life, whatever tradition or religion you're born into. I mean, asking the question, what's beyond tomorrow, what's beyond today, what's beyond the senses? So the sutra is very significant from a spiritual point of view. The 55th and 56th sutras of third chapter, Vibhudipada. Tharakam sarva vishayam sarvatha vishayam. So vivekajam jnanam, this knowledge, spiritual realization, which is born of inner wisdom, it is tharagam, means it takes you across this cycle or this river of the ocean of life and death. And what kind of knowledge, how does it really manifest? Sarva vishayam, it means it gives you an intuitive understanding of everything. See, there are two kinds of understanding of anything in this world. So it is called, even in different areas of objectified knowledge, where you use laboratory methods, your intellectual powers to understand certain things with the help of mind and your five senses of perception, you understand certain things. But at a higher level, you are able to make a proper sense of what you understand or your knowledge. That higher faculty is called vivekajam jnana. I mean, when we get knowledge, that knowledge gives us power, the knowledge gives us some inner skills, abilities. To get an inner understanding, an inner insight into the true nature of what we know, that's higher knowledge. That higher knowledge is called sarvavishayam. Means it helps you to understand the essence of everything. That's the true nature of everything. Sarvatha vishayam. It means it helps you to understand things in all directions, in all areas, in all states. Then akramam cha means akrama, they say that is a word to be understood properly. Not stage by stage. Normally, all ordinary kinds of knowledge or cognitive processes will have a stage-by-stage process. You won't understand the meaning of a philosophical doctrine or a scientific formula if you hear just once in the classroom. Now, only a fraction of it may be obvious to you. So you understand slowly, there is an ancient verse in Sanskrit, Acharya padamadatte padam shishyasumedhya padam subrahmacharibhyaha padam kalakramenacha. Literal meaning is, the whole knowledge is divided into four quarters, four equal parts. So what you learn from a teacher is one-fourth. Then the other fourth, the second quarter, you may understand by discussing with your friends who attended the same class. So you find that some other more intelligent, brilliant students have understood little more than what you have understood, or little more of what you have understood. And then there is one way of knowing by your own effort. You work hard, think, contemplate, and you'll get the same knowledge in more complete form. But then you get the whole picture of what you learn in classroom only gradually, in course of time. Kalakramena means in course of time, stage by stage. Spiritual knowledge is not like that. It is akrama, means not stage by stage. It's just like Sri Ramakrishna says in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, if a room is dark, pitch dark. Even if you want to bring light to that room, you don't have to bring light one after another. If you bring light, if you switch on the light, the darkness goes away immediately, not stage by stage, not gradually, but at one stroke. So this higher spiritual knowledge that you acquire through samyama, concentration, meditation, and intuition, is akrama, means complete, at one stroke, not stage by stage. Because it is beyond logical analysis, logical understanding, for which you use all these six tools of epistemology. In Vedanta, you know, of course, yoga system and Sankhya system doesn't have six tools. They have only three. I mean, direct perception, inference, and verbal testimony. But in Vedantic tradition, they have six tools in the epistemology, in the theory of knowledge. With direct perception, inference, comparison, it's called analogy, verbal testimony, and presumption, gradually. So there are different ways of knowing. Sometimes, you know, the absence of something also is a source of knowledge, because you come to know of its absence there, like that. Anyway, that's a different subject we will deal with later. So the whole point is, this spiritual knowledge comes at one stroke. It is comprehensive. It doesn't come stage by stage. It's like opening the dark corners of your own heart, or like bringing a bright light to the room which kept us dark, kept in pitch darkness maybe for thousands of years. You bring a light, then all darkness disappears. So that's the 55th sutra. 56th one is Sattva-purusha-yoga Shuddhisami Kaivalyam Iti. This is the 56th sutra. With this, we are coming to the end of the Vibhuti Pada. So, Sattva-purusha-yoga Kaivalyam Iti. Iti here is a word, maybe you read the sutra, means Adhyaya Samapti, means the end of the chapter. So, what is liberation? So liberation is buddhisattva, means complete freedom from all vrittis. When our mind or chittam becomes completely free from all impressions and vrittis, at that time we identify our true nature as the all-knowing, self-effulgent Purusha, who is the embodiment of knowledge and awareness. So this is the last sutra of the third chapter. So now I mentioned to you, you please remember, when you read your printed book, the any yoga text that is printed everywhere, the order of the chapters is like this. First chapter deals with concentration or samadhi. The second chapter deals with practices. The third chapter deals with the results of practices. It's the psychic powers we described just now. And the fourth chapter is the last. That's in life also, that's the last stage. Kaivalyam is liberation, spiritual liberation. The highest spiritual realization, and in complete freedom. So yoga is defined as a royal pathway to freedom by Vivekananda, who was incidentally the first great teacher who interpreted yoga in modern English language. Though before that there have been translations, but there were not many real expositions in English language. It is Vivekananda who first introduced yoga psychology and yoga system to the Western world by writing a commentary with a translation, and also his own classes on yoga. So in all these printed books, you find the order is, as I mentioned, samadhi, pada, sadhana pada, vibhuti pada, kaivalya pada. In English, it means first the chapter on concentration, then the next chapter on practices or means, the third chapter the psychic powers that you develop as a result of this concentration. And the fourth chapter is liberation. Now, in actual practice, in ancient Vedic hermitages, the ancient sages used to teach differently. Remember, all these students used to be very small children. So they used to memorize these whole 195 sutras. For them, it was a child play. They used to memorize the whole Vedas. You know, this is like kindergarten studying for small children. They used to memorize the whole 195 sutras. Maybe within months they will memorize. So in ancient times, in traditional hermitages, they used to teach this text, like Samadhi Pada, then Sadhana Pada, first concentration, then practices, then psychic powers, and then, of course, liberation. So when they teach Samadhi Pada, for example, they could always ask the student to remember the whole chapter, any sutra that they want to recite from other chapters. So for them, it was nothing. It was very natural. But from a spiritual point of view, you know, the first stage of yoga is practice. You start practice first. Means, and when you practice yoga, like meditation, pranayama, and dharana, dhyana, samadhi, all this, then only you develop various psychic powers. Not before that. So the first stage in yogic practice should be naturally practices. And the second stage, when you practice, you develop these special skills through samyama. And the third stage, you get samadhi, the highest stage. Means asamprajnata samadhi. You will learn this gradually. As you develop various skills and powers as a practice of samyama, and as you develop the spiritual wisdom to transcend the influence of these psychic powers, then you get the highest samadhi. So that is that should be the third stage. The fourth stage, naturally, is liberation. So when I started this class, I first took some sutras from the Samadhi Pada. The reason is, Samadhi Pada gives you many of the fundamental definitions of yoga. You know, all the definitions, entrance, yoga, citta, vritti, nirodha. The Samadhi Pada. Yoga means cessation of all the impressions, vrittis, vasanas, etc. Mean transcending. Not negative running away from, but then sublimations, real meaning. So like that, all these definitions are contained in the early sutras of Samadhipada. So in order to acquaint you with those definitions, which form the introduction to yoga, I took around 14-15 sutras of Samadhipada. Then I left it there. Then I really started from the first stage of spiritual practice, that is sadhana, practice. So that is over. And after that, we discussed the second stage. What is the second stage? Powers, psychic skills, powers that we develop as a practice of sadhana. I mean, spirit meditation, pranayama, etc. Third stage is samadhi, concentration. Fourth stage is kaivalya. So we are now coming to samadhi pada. So you should not be confused. I mentioned this earlier many times. So you should not be confused. Even if you don't remember what I stated, you won't miss anything. So first stage in spiritual life is sadhana, which means practice. Second stage in spiritual life is naturally the powers that you develop as a practice of visadhana. The third stage is when you develop this higher concentration, power of concentration, samadhi. That's what we are going to discuss now. So the first sutra in Samadhipada is Atha Yoga Anishasana. That's the first sutra. So the literal meaning is very simple. Now, henceforth, we are going to discuss the science of yoga. This is the literal translation of Atha Yoga Anushasana. If this was the whole meaning, nobody will think of yoga. But it has got a higher meaning. So, the great commentators like Vyasa, Vijnana Bhikshu, and Shankaracharya, and many other commentators, they expounded the true meaning of all these Vedic statements. So, some of the commentaries you can keep in mind because I may be quoting from them. One is Tattu Vaisharathi. It is written by Vachaspati. So Vachaspati is one of the greatest commentators of yoga tradition. The name of this book is Tattu Vaisharathi. You get these books even in this country. You get the original text with English translation. And second one is Yoga Bhashya Vartigam. It was written by Vijnana Bhikshu. Yoga Bhashya was the commentary by Vyasa on Patanjali Yoga Sutra. And Vijnana Bhikshu wrote a commentary on the commentary of Vyasa, which is again a commentary on Patanjali Yoga Sutra. So, and Shankaracharya wrote his famous Bhashya Vivaranam, which is again a super commentary and exposition of Vyasa's own commentary. Now, the question arises, what is the meaning of Atha, now? What's the meaning of now? Now means when we reach a stage, as the worm, you know, the worm suddenly reached a stage, he looked at the huge locomotive running towards it, and it wanted to save its life at a physical level, and it crawled out of the track and saved its life. When do we think of getting out of this track of evolution? Means birth, life, and all its problems, death, and again rebirth. When do we start thinking? Well, is there some higher meaning for human existence? When we look beyond utilitarian values, when we look beyond the immediate concerns, suddenly we start evolving in another direction. Not the physical direction, not the evolution that Darwin talked about in the Origin of Species, but an evolution that's a higher evolution. When maybe it could happen in so many ways. Sometimes, you know, fate catches you by the throat, the destiny, the cruel destiny, and makes you open your eyes. See, look around you. And suddenly you start thinking of higher things. Sometimes we work hard, we do many things, and you find the result is different. You thought of certain things, certain people in one way, but suddenly your expectations, your judgments get shattered. So then we start thinking beyond the logic of life, logic of mathematics and physics. 2 + 2 = 4 in mathematics and logic. But 2 + 2 = 4, that logic may not apply in life. Sometimes you work hard for something or somebody, and the result response is just the opposite. So you cannot reconcile. It doesn't work like this in a laboratory or in mathematics and logic. 2 + 2 = 4. The reciprocal response is assured, but not in life. And then we think, is the higher meaning for life? That's the meaning of Atha. Atha means now, henceforth. These are simple translations in Sanskrit dictionary. So Vyasa says, Atha iti ayamadi adhikarartha. Yoganushasanam shastram adhikrutam vedidavyam yoga samadhischa sarva bhaumascha chittasya dharma. So Vyasa's commentary.
So artha means, it's very interesting, iti adhigarartha means when you are fit, when you reach a stage of spiritual fitness for thinking of higher values in life. That's the meaning of now or artha. That is what Vyasa says. So mean when it could happen in so many different ways, as I mentioned. When you get some blows in life, you understand the perishable nature of many things which you took to be imperishable. You understand the transitoriness of many things which you thought were permanent. Suddenly you find all these things have a different meaning. So this disappointment could be one. In fact, that's what happened. Even Buddha, it happened. You know, when he saw the sick man, when he saw the procession of a dead body, or when he saw an old man, the reality, the cruel reality of old age, death, sickness, all these suddenly made him open his inner eye. He thought, well, there's a higher meaning in life. Therefore, this doesn't happen to everyone. Only those who have reached some higher level of evolution will think of some transcendental spiritual idea. Will look beyond, oh, there is something higher. Otherwise, they go and have some heavy drinks, that's all, to forget, to run away from the cruel realities of life. So they are more highly evolved. They sit back and think, just the worm suddenly crawled out of the track, because it wanted freedom. It wanted freedom from death. So also, when we want freedom in spiritual life, we go for higher spiritual meaning. It could be when you turn to mysticism, higher spiritual poetry, or meditation, or prayer, whatever it is. It is not just giving away something. It is other moving towards something higher. It is not that you reject certain things. When you reject certain things, thinking that by rejecting that you would become spiritual, you're totally mistaken, wrong. It is not just running away from something, but rather it is moving towards something higher. That is the real meaning of now, artha here. So that's why he says, it means fitness. Vyasa says, fitness. Spiritual fitness to turn to yoga. That spiritual fitness comes through our own evolution. If you have read some yoga books, I mean higher spiritual literature in any spiritual tradition, if you have read Sermon on the Mount, or if you have read any prayer, anything, you have some acquaintance to Upanishads of Gita or anything higher spiritual values. This all you are already stored in your mind as a background. And then you, on one day, you suddenly confront a very unpleasant reality. Then instead of going towards certain things to forget your worry, what you do? You go, move towards something to find an explanation for your worry. Higher value. So that's the real meaning of artha. Otherwise, if you are just running away from an unpleasant reality, then you will fall in a vacuum. Rather, the emphasis is you move towards a higher value, higher spiritual pursuit, rather than you move away from something lower. The emphasis, you move to something higher and not just moving away from something that's lower. So that's why Vyasa says, atha iti ayam atha iti ayam adhigarartha. So it is adhigarartha. Yoganushastram shastram adhikrutam veditavyam. So a text is science. So shastram is the meaning used, Vyasa says, it means science. Science follows a certain logic. So you find if you read the Patanjali's sutras and commentaries of Vijnana Bhikshu or Vyasa and Shankaracharya and others will be very logical. You know, any well-educated psychologist will just nod his head in approval. He may not go and practice yoga, but you see, that's fine. It is okay. Scientifically, it is perfectly. From a psychological point of view, it's okay. So, then Vyasa goes on analyzing the world of human mind, the human mind, how the mental world of every human being. So he says, human mind has got five stages. That is, kshiptam, moodam, vikshiptam, egagram, niruddhamiti, chitta, bhumayeha. Bhuma means state. The whole human mind, the way human mind works, the way we react to life and our own thoughts, the realities in the world outside and also the realities within our own mind, explained here. So first stage is kshiptam, where your mind is somewhat dull. It cannot react. A state of inertia, ignorance. It is, from a psychological point of view, it's a pathological state, not normally found among human beings in its extreme degree. The second state is, moving, but again it is not enlightened. I will explain this one after another. The third stage should be understood properly. Then you will be able to understand all the other four stages. The third stage is vikshipta. Vikshipta means a pendulum, like a pendulum of a clock that moves from one end to the other end. That's the category that mostly all human beings belong to. You know, suddenly when we read a book, when you go to a temple, when you discuss some spiritual matters, immediately you are excited, we are impressed, we want to bring about a change in our life. Mind feels inner ecstasy, blissfulness, and so on. But after some time, when you are in another scenario, another place, in the company of another type of people, then mind functions differently. So it's just like the pendulum of a clock. It moves in one direction and then it doesn't remain there. It moves in the opposite direction also. Mostly all spiritual seekers who begin spiritual life belong to this category. So if you really understand this category called Vikshiptavasthas, Vyasa calls it, means where it's always a changing. Different samskaras, different impressions, vrittis accumulated in life, dragging the mind in so many directions. One positive direction, then after some time in the opposite direction. So this changeable nature is the most common situation that we come across in the life of ordinary spiritual seekers. So, today I didn't have my watch with me. So, almost we will have interaction now. Oh, yeah. So, I forgot that. So, we will have question answer now. So, we have maybe less than 10 minutes. So, if there is anything that you want to ask, we can discuss. So this is the beginning of one chapter which elaborately deals with the definitions of important terms and important aspects of yoga for the first 14 sutras. Okay. You want to ask something, doctor?
No.
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah.
It is always, you can still become better and better. So I'm not
understanding.
I understand. Yeah. Now, during practice, you progress stage by stage, but the knowledge itself doesn't come bit by bit. Because in all spiritual practices, the highest knowledge suddenly comes in a flash, the highest experience. So very often when we practice for some time, we may evolve, we may progress. But then what happens, you know, then at one stage we feel we are not making any progress at all. We feel we have come to a dead end. This is what really happens. Actually, we are making progress, but progress from 0 to 1 appears to be faster than the progress from 3 to 7, like that. So in spiritual life, it doesn't work in straight line. And then, so after making a lot of progress, many spiritual seekers, we feel a kind of inner vacuum. They feel the goal is still distant. And then only suddenly the real knowledge comes. That knowledge, that higher intuitive knowledge, comes in a flash. It may be the most obvious example for any devotee of Sri Ramakrishna. Indeed, Sri Ramakrishna's life itself. Sri Ramakrishna was practicing meditation all this for 12 years. But then a few minutes before he got the highest realization, the temple, he was intensely worried. Oh, mother, still you are not revealing to me. And then it all happened. So the difference between that state and the state after realizing the highest is so different. That's what happens. That's why the higher inner intuitive realization does not come state by state, bit by bit.
This stage, the third stage, Vishipta, the vacillating mind.
Yeah.
Is that, I mean, well, two questions. Is that due to our lack of knowledge, and is that the cause of our lack of progress?
Yes. It is actually due to the conflicting vrittis and samskaras that have accumulated in our mind. So, you know, human mind, human chittam, as you call it, it is the mental world, let us say. It is, it has got a huge reservoir, store of samskaras, impressions, vrittis, good and also bad, positive and negative. So when your samskaras when the positive samskaras are very strong, then you will feel less conflict in practicing meditation, reading holy books and all that. When negative samskaras are stronger than the positive ones, then you feel more conflict. So it is due to this conflicting nature of samskaras. All these samskaras divide themselves into two broad categories, the positive and negative. So the clock, so the pendulum moving in one direction, and with the same velocity, it moves in the opposite direction. So, in fact, the analogy stops there. So you should not think beyond this, about the clock. What happens, when we do karma yoga, prayer, meditation, or any reinforcing positive samskaras, positive impressions, with more and more either reading or listening or discussion or prayer, then the conflict gets reduced because the positive samskaras increase. And as positive samskaras increase more and more, the conflict is progressively reduced. So it is the conflicting nature of samskaras which are stored up in the chitta mind that creates this vacillation, changeability. That's right.
Swamiji, you mentioned positive samskaras and negative samskaras, positive energy and negative energy. Broadly speaking, you would say good brings positive energy, bad brings negative energy.
Yeah.
But how do you define good in a world where good is an undefinable quantity? And do you base it on ethics?
Yeah.
Or do you base it on?
Well, you know, it's based on dharma, because dharma, the word dharma is a little more profound than ethics. Something sustaining and also ethical. So that's what is positive samskaras. Anything, in every spiritual seeker will develop a kind of inner mechanism which will tell him or tell her, this is the right thing I should do. That is how we begin our spiritual life. The moment we turn to spiritual life, a secondary personality begins evolving in our mental system. It may be weak at the beginning. If that secondary personality, the word personality, the secondary personality belongs to the positive. It is the proper guide. When you practice more and more, this secondary personality becomes stronger and stronger, and progressively the negative samskaras vanish. And that's why Sri Ramakrishna says, at one stage, the higher stage, your mind becomes your own guide, your own guru. The highest, the best friend is our own mind, and the worst enemy also our own mind. So what really happens, what is acceptable to the secondary personality is what is called positive. So, at the beginning of one's life, going to a temple or a place of meditation or anywhere, you feel a kind of inner joy. But when certain people return to their home, they are much more confused and conflict than ordinary people who may never turn to any higher place. So beginning, this conflict is so obvious. That's because the secondary personality is generated, but is weak. But as we progress, this conflict is reduced. That's why beginning of spiritual life, one should not meditate for a long time. Because these positive samskaras are very weak, negative samskaras are very strong. That creates intense conflict, even schizophrenic problems. That's why for spiritual seekers, it is an important point. They should not meditate for a very long time at the beginning. They can pray, they can read books, they can discuss spiritual matters, and gradually they can do. They should not. Because when you sit quiet, what happens? All the senses are withdrawn from external objects. So the whole world is limited to the mind. And so these inner conflicts become more intense. That's the idea. It's clear?
So Swamiji, these great yogis, it takes them many years to achieve this enlightenment or that ultimate realization that comes in a flash. I've been alive for 54 years. I've yet to meet someone who's had that realization. And I haven't talked to you, so I don't know. What is a realistic chance that people like us that are busy everyday life and have maybe 10 or 15 minutes to meditate in a day, that they will ever ultimately reach that realization?
Well, you know, along with that practice, when you keep your mind connected to these ideas, being acquainted with these ideas, you feel yourself a kind of inner joy. If you feel a kind of inner joy and blissfulness when you are meditating or praying, and then we are able to enjoy turning to spiritual life, that means you are on the right track. That means less conflict. So ultimately, your own mind alone can be the judge. So all that we can say, a truly sincere spiritual seeker will feel at one stage a kind of, you feel at home with spiritual ideas, spiritual conversations. He won't be bored. He won't consider it's a torture to listen to ideas which apparently have no empirical value, really speaking, you know. So that itself shows that our mind is opening to some higher ideas. This idea.
Yes, sir. have a question. I just like to tell him, when you have yoga tools and you're practicing at least 1 year, you need to have 3 months, go somewhere in woods or the quiet place, and you definitely will achieve enlightenment. Only you need minimum 3 months to be out of society and with yourself. I can say this loud.
So thank you. We will continue this discussion in the next class. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Pranamastu.